Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
It all started on March 6th with the first probable case of the new coronavirus, COVID-19, found in Montgomery County. By March 11th, some schools in Montgomery County were closing and the NBA has suspended its season indefinitely after a player tested positive. By the next day, Governor Wolf had shut all schools and many public places in Montgomery County, and so the saga goes on. 2 days later, all schools in PA were to be closed for 10 business days, and of course, we know that school children will now not be returning to school this school year. And even some of the education officials are saying they may not even open in the fall. By the 15th of March, Governor Wolf had ordered all restaurants and bars in Allegheny, Bucks, Chester, Delaware, and Montgomery counties closed to dine in. Parades and marathons were canceled. PA Turnpike rest stops were closed. Entire counties were closed down by order of Governor Wolf. By March 19th, all quote-unquote non-life-sustaining businesses across PA must close, and those that are opened must follow mitigation guidelines. A stay-at-home order is issued, and now here we are, the end of April, and we are still home awaiting the governor's orders to leave our homes. Over 1.5 million Pennsylvanians have filed for unemployment. How have we gotten to this point, and how can we get back to normal? My guest today is State Senator Scott Hutchison, who represents the 21st Senatorial District encompassing all of Clarion, Forest, and Venango counties and parts of Butler and Warren counties. Thanks, Senator, for being with us.
Thank you for this opportunity, Diane. Great to be here.
So I'm sure that Governor Wolf checked with you guys, checked with the legislative body before he made any of these decisions, right? You're working very closely with him, right?
Can you hear me laughing?
Yeah, I heard that.
Quite frankly, I understand when and everybody understands when there's an emergency, the executive is in place to move quickly, and he did that. But then the legislature started to, you know, we put in place plans for us to be able to be part of that discussion, but really have not been intimately involved. We've a few things were done bipartisan, but as time went on, fewer things were going through bipartisan. The governor started vetoing things that we were hearing on the ground and trying to get done for our folks. And in the end, it seems like the governor talks more with governors from other states mm-hmm. than he does with his very own legislature. So
well, right, because he...
That's where we're at.
Yeah, he put Pennsylvania with that coalition of 6 or 7 states, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Delaware...
New York. Yeah,
I think that was all. I mean, that was
yes.
enough.
And the interesting thing was that if you look across the, he didn't talk to Ohio, he didn't talk mm-hmm. to Maryland, both mm-hmm. of which have Republican governors.
Exactly. Yeah.
But all the others had Democrat governors. But
yeah.
Here we are.
So the Democrats in your case in the state Senate, and I think it's the same thing in the House, they are not wanting to cooperate. They're not wanting to work with you guys to get the state reopened. That pretty much
That's unfortunately correct. Early on, you know, the first things we did, bipartisan, unanimous votes, some good things. I mean, moving the date for the primary election, mm-hmm. Allowing, you know, changing the rules so that we as a body can meet remotely,
uh-huh.
things like giving the Secretary of Education the ability to waive testing requirements, allowing him to be able to waive the 180-day restriction for mm-hmm. school. You know, those are things that the governor wanted to do unilaterally,
okay.
but the legislature said, no, you really should do this with our input.
Mm-hmm.
Those things all passed very quickly, bipartisan, unanimous votes, and were signed into law. But then we wanted to go to the next step, which, you know, we're on the ground hearing from businesses
mm-hmm.
Hearing from individuals and hospitals and things that they need or want, and we've run into a brick wall.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I know here, well, the total deaths in Pennsylvania is 2,195 as of yesterday.
Yeah.
of those, 1,428 are in nursing homes or personal care facilities. So over half of the deaths are the most vulnerable, those in nursing homes. It doesn't impact, I mean, every death is tragic. There's no question about that.
Sure.
But the rest of the state, except for Philadelphia area, which is really the hot spot in Pennsylvania, I mean, I think it should be able to reopen. But it's apparent that Governor Wolf and the Democrats are, of course, following suit, following him like, you know, lemmings off a cliff. But they don't seem to want to reopen. And we have 1.5 million Pennsylvanians on unemployment right now who applied for unemployment. And you guys passed, SB 613?
Correct.
What was that and what happened to that?
Well, that bill we thought was a common sense approach. Number one, we want businesses to be open. We want them open safely.
Right.
That bill just said the governor, who had previously made this list of essential and non-essential businesses, he made that list without any input. We said you should go back to the drawing board, use these objective criteria that were set by the CDC, the federal CDC, and the Federal Cybersecurity Agency. They have criteria that were, we thought, reasonable, and they're saying, here's the businesses that can be open, and here's what they have to do to operate safely. And we said, go back to the drawing board, make a new plan, use these guidelines, objective guidelines, and open is, you know, start again, start allowing businesses to operate. But that bill made it to his desk, and he vetoed it immediately. That was the end of that.
Yeah.
And I mean, we did follow up saying, okay, if you don't like that, let's empower local governments, the local counties, to make plans of their own, because, you know, this is a diverse state.
Right.
And we have local elected officials across the state. They want what's best for their communities. Again, we said they would have to go by those federal guidelines, but in the end, they would be the ones making decisions whether things are open or shut.
Right.
And again, we were unable to get that through because of
You were taking away his power. I mean, to me, it's almost as if he has become power hungry. And I think a lot of the Democratic governors, because we have to look at it, this whole COVID-19 thing has become political. Because when you compare the Democrat-controlled or Democrat governorships, those states are being much more restrictive and are dragging their feet much more than the Republican governors are. And which is tragic. Why use a pandemic for political purposes, except it's a presidential election year? I mean, that's what I think it boils down to that. So, you know,
definitely
within days,
pardon? Unfortunate. That's definitely, politics has become too big a part of this, and that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, that's for sure. And within days after he vetoed SB 613, and, you know, thousands of Pennsylvanians descended upon Harrisburg, and there was also the same day a protest in Pittsburgh demanding that the governor reopen the economy. You know, they wanted to go back to work. They want to go back to work. And he said he didn't know they were there in Harrisburg. Anyway, that's what I think he told a reporter. He must be hiding in a cave, which I almost think he is hiding in a cave, because you call the governor's office, as I've asked people to do, it's immediately transferred to the Department of Health. No one in the governor's office, I guess they're all furloughed, I guess, but no one is answering the phone in the governor's office. It's all going to the Department of Health, which I'm seeing it as Governor Wolf is taking his marching orders from that department, or the other Democratic governors that have formed this coalition in the Northeast. And, I don't know. Is there any way that the legislative body can strip him of some of this authority that he has or that he thinks he has?
It's interesting you ask that, because there's two tracks. There is, theoretically, we could overturn his emergency declaration by resolution. But the problem is he has to sign that.
He'd have to sign it. Oh,
so,
I'm sure.
Yeah, so we need two-thirds of the legislature, which the Democrats, as I said, they have not broken ranks once after the first couple weeks of voting with us on everything. They stopped. So we're not going to be able to overturn. In a longer term initiative, when we actually started this because of the opioid declaration, we started looking at the emergency declaration law, and some of us, I think I'm the one who offered the amendment in committee to say the governor can only designate an emergency for 30 days, and after then it must be approved by the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Common
sense. Not that we have to overturn it. It's just like if we don't approve it, then it's done.
Right.
Because this continuing thing is the problem.
Yeah.
Everybody understands that emergencies happen. You have to act quickly. But
right.
But after 30 days, if it's that big of an emergency, you should get some other people involved to help you make the right decision.
Right.
And that's what our republic calls for.
Exactly.
So we put that language in there, and the governor said, "I will never sign this bill." And again, it became a partisan vote.
Yeah.
At that point, so we were unable to establish that in law going forward. But that's what we need in the long run is some restrictions in law. But it's going to take, even if a Republican governor were in power, who knows if they would sign that bill, because they are giving up power.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an uphill climb, but that's really the way I think things should be operated.
Yeah, and really, in hindsight, of course, hindsight's 2020. That should have been put in the law to begin with. Then again, it may never.
I think nobody imagined how strong government was and how far people would take it. They thought of emergencies as, oh, there was a tornado,
right?
And it shut down a small community for a week or so. And that's one thing. But when you have the opioid declaration, I think it's going on to 20 months now.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I mean, it looks like that's never going to end.
Yeah.
How long is he going to keep this going?
Supposedly.
Who knows?
Yeah, supposedly on May 1st, we're supposed to find out which counties he's going to allow the residents to leave their homes. But when you're looking at that color-coded plan that he has, you compare red to yellow, there's hardly any difference. The only thing is, with the yellow, you can leave your house. Almost every other restriction is in place. It's ridiculous.
All I know is I hear these heartbreaking stories every day from businessmen who say, I worked my whole life, and now I'm losing it. In 2 months, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
And it just rips my heart out.
Yeah.
And
I believe a lot of Pennsylvanians, I believe a lot of hardworking Pennsylvanians believe that Governor Wolf has no heart. And how did he, has he ever let you guys know, the legislative body know, how he determined which businesses could be open and which businesses had to be closed?
It's funny you should ask that today, because he absolutely has not. He's been asked repeatedly. He's been asked at hearings. He's been asked by written correspondence, and no answer. So this afternoon, we are scheduled in the Senate to vote to authorize a subpoena to be served on the governor.
Oh, wow.
To produce all the information, how the decisions were made, who made the decisions,
right.
What criteria, which businesses were allowed to open, which was ones were not specifically. I mean, because they gave a list. I think that the police have the list for their local areas. He has never released it anywhere else.
Wow.
It's bizarre. And that's public information.
Yeah, I would.
We want to be able to compare, because we hear from businesses again, oh, my competitor's open one. I apply for a waiver and they wouldn't give me one.
Uh-huh.
He's got one.
Yeah.
We want to get to the bottom of that process.
Yeah.
And see how and why decisions are made, and they've been dragging their feet.
Yeah.
So we're going to.
I've heard some of those stories, and it's almost as if he showed favoritism. I'll put it like that.
Well, that's certainly what it looks like.
Yeah.
Maybe when we see the facts, it'll be different, but we have to see them to figure that out.
Exactly.
Share the info. get nothing.
And like you're saying, that's public information. But even going down through the list of not names of businesses, but that there was a list he had as to, you know, yes, no, as to whether they could open it or, you know, the categories. I mean, originally he shut down, what was it, coal mines, I believe, or something?
Yeah.
And construction's still not open.
Right.
It just, to me, from
my... There was a lot of inconsistency.
Yes.
And a lot, and that's what my offices have been hearing about, those inconsistencies. Why can't we get a waiver?
Mm-hmm.
We have to operate so that they can operate, and et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
And it just didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
And that's why we wanted to put those federal guidelines in place. Then it's very objective.
Which makes sense. I know President Trump just announced that the federal distancing regulations or rules or whatever are not going to be extended. Once they're over, they're over. So, because, you know, he's obviously seeing the devastation across the nation as far as the economy. And when you're comparing the numbers, I know that, you know, we didn't know what we were going into with COVID-19 because it was a new coronavirus. But as we can look back, it's not quite as bad as what we thought, because we're talking about a 90% to 95%, 96% survival rate if you get it. I know UPMC, they had, I think, 2% of their beds had COVID patients. They wanted to reopen. They wanted to start. Well, they wanted to start doing elective surgeries again. And the Department of Health's secretary said, "We're not ready for that yet." So, 2% of their beds were being used by the, you know, COVID patients.
I've been hearing from all my hospitals about that elective surgery
thing. Yeah.
Because that's how they keep their doors open.
Exactly. And think of all this.
They flushed all that money down the toilet.
Yeah. And think of all the suffering people out there. I mean, Meadville, the pain clinic is not taking patients. You know, they're calling people and canceling appointments. People are in pain and they can't get any relief. People need to see doctors. And I'm sorry, the telemedicine is okay when you just want to talk to your doctor, but they can't tell a whole lot of anything. I mean, with telemedicine, I mean, there is a conversation there and some advice given, but you know, there are limitations to telemedicine. But and speaking of that, Governor Wolf vetoed your guys' telemedicine bill because it had restrictions on abortion. He said,
"Yeah,
we can't recall him, right?" I know Michigan is
looking
at that.
No, we can't.
Yeah, too bad. So what kind of advice would you give to us voters out here? What can we do, if anything, beyond pray?
I mean, in the long run, I hope people realize how strong and important it is. You know, how strong our executive branch is,
mm-hmm.
and how important it is to have the right person running it.
Yeah.
I think this has been an eye opener for a lot of people, and on the back end of that, there's also the courts, because early on the governor had restricted gun shops from opening, and somebody immediately took that to court because Second Amendment rights, and guess what? The courts sided with the governor.
Well, yeah, it's a Democratic court. I mean, mostly, majority.
People have to realize that elections have consequences, and when you elect people that are going to go, you know, anti-Second Amendment votes, things like that, that's scary stuff. So so people have to be more involved. That's long run stuff. I mean, in the short term, we need people to try and contact the governor. That's really the roadblock at this point. I do think we've moved him. He's come, you know, he's at least entertaining opening things on May 8th. We'll see how.
Well, he's got the liquor stores open.
That is,
you know,
you
open the liquor stores first.
Yeah.
Liquor stores. I mean, yeah. To me, so, I'm telling everybody, now we know what is a priority business for the Wolf administration. It's the liquor stores. Yeah. crazy. Totally crazy. Do you have a website? Folks can go to your website.
Senator Hutchison's website is senatorscotthutchison.com. That's senatorscotthutchison.com.
Thanks, Scott, for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you take
Thanks
care and
take care.
Dodge those raindrops.
Yeah.
Okay, take care. Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.